Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher, 8:06 on this Monday morning. It's June 30th. 60 degrees under mostly sunny skies here in Old Town Park City. Heber City reporting 58 degrees at the airport. And on the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, meteorologist Cedric Haynes. Good morning.
Happy Monday, KPCW listeners. I'm meteorologist Cedric Haynes with a look at your Monday forecast as we kick off the week. It's going to be a hot one out there as we're looking at lots of sunshine. Park City, look for temperatures to climb into the mid to upper 80s for highs this afternoon. In the Heber Valley, we're looking at lots of sunshine. Temperatures will be climbing into the low to mid 90s across the region. So, yes, the heat is on to kick off our first or last day of June heading into the beginning of July. The first day of July, we continue with the hot weather. In fact, hotter temperatures are likely. Highs will be nearing 90 degrees for our friends in Park City as we go throughout the afternoon, with high temperatures climbing into the low to mid-90s for the Heber Valley. Now, we will introduce a few extra clouds in the afternoon on your Tuesday and maybe a slight chance of an isolated storm as we go throughout your Tuesday afternoon, but most of us will likely remain dry. Now, as we go into the middle of the week, we may see a little bit of monsoonal moisture trying to sneak in, as we're going to be stuck between low pressure and high pressure. That'll help squeeze some of that monsoonal moisture out. So we could see a slightly higher chance of some isolated showers and storms for your Wednesday and Thursday afternoons. That means temperatures will also be slightly cooler as well. So in Park City, we're talking highs only in the mid-80s for us on your Wednesday. By Thursday, high temperatures may only be in the upper 70s to near 80 degrees. Meanwhile, in the Heber Valley, we're going to be talking those high temperatures nearing 90 still for your Wednesday, with highs only in the low to mid-80s for us as we go towards your Thursday. Again, a slightly better chance of those isolated pop-up showers and storms. We'll continue with the partly sunny to mostly sunny skies as we get into your Friday, which happens to be the 4th of July. Right now, it's looking primarily dry. There is a slight chance of a stray shower developing with the daytime heating. Otherwise, not too bad. Temperatures, highs nearing 80 degrees for Park City. We'll see those highs in the mid to upper 80s for the Heber Valley for the 4th of July. But it does get warmer heading into the 4th of July weekend, Saturday and Sunday, with highs back in the low to mid 80s in Park City and nearing 90 in the Heber Valley. That's your latest forecast from the ABC Forecast Center. I'm meteorologist Cedric Kane.
Okay, thanks, Cedric. KPCW News Time now, 8:08. Well, stay tuned. Coming up on the local news hour this morning, I'll be checking in with Clubhouse staff member Philip Sharpless, along with club member Scott Kay. They'll have details on the three-day Utah State Clubhouse Coalition Conference they attended late last week. Then the superintendent of the South Summit School District, Greg Mann, will be calling in with details on the passage of next year's budget. And finally, from Park City Friends of the Library, I have board members Rachel Salmon and Kathy Lanigan with details on the upcoming used book sale this week. Then stay tuned for Mountain Money. Today's guests include Michael Huerta, the former administrator of the Federal Aviation Administration. He'll discuss the many challenges that currently face the commercial aviation industry. Then Mark Brown and Barry Nan Cohen Rothschild talk about the upcoming running of the balls on Miners Day, September 1st. All of that coming up on Mountain Money, heard, of course, every Monday from 9 to 10. Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher, taking a look now at some local news. KPCW Radio and a freelance journalist for the Park Record took home two prestigious awards for journalism and storytelling last Thursday at the Society of Professional Journalists Utah Headliners Chapter's award ceremony. KPCW's Grace Dorfler was honored with the Quintus C. Wilson Ethics Award, which highlights an individual for an outstanding contribution to Utah's journalism industry, particularly for demonstrating a concern for journalism ethics. Dorfler's 2024 reports covering former Wasatch High School head football coach Jody Morgan detailed how several families in the school district alleged Morgan verbally and emotionally abused their sons, creating a culture of fear and intimidation. In presenting the award, freelance journalist Tom Haroldson noted that sometimes journalists must tell stories that make people feel uncomfortable, and that's what Dorfler did by diligently pursuing this difficult story.
We have always revered our coaches who coach high school football, but sometimes things happen that we didn't expect. That's what happened in this particular case. There were complaints being made about a certain coach at a certain school here in the Wasatch Front. A reporter with KPCW Radio pursued this. It's not easy to take on high school coaches, especially in small towns like Heber City. But she was diligent and she did it. It needed to be done.
Accepting the award, Dorfler noted that while the reporting was about abuse, it was also about building relationships with sources who grew to trust her and confide in her.
For me, this reporting was most of all about consent at every step of the way. To share your story with a reporter, with the whole community, is a difficult thing to do. And so when we're pursuing these stories, I think that we can do our part to give back a sense of agency to sources who have experienced harm.
Dorfler also earned an award for government reporting on Heber City's proposed short-term rental rules and finished second in the personality profile category with a story about a Heber City man who rode horseback across the country to raise awareness for wild Mustangs. KPCW Director of Digital Media Matt Sampson earned a third-place award in general news reporting with his story about Park City Sisters who survived Hurricane Helene, highlighting the need for disaster relief. Another major award, the Don Baker Investigative Journalism Award, was given to a former KPCW news director and freelance journalist Michelle Dininger. It was for her work uncovering how the state's highest paid public school COO, Mike Tanner of the Park City School District, lived and worked part-time in Chicago. President of the Utah chapter of the Society for Professional Journalists, Emma Penrod, gave out the award. Despite initial threats of legal action against Dininger, Penrod said the district eventually eliminated Tanner's position and issued a public apology. Penrod said Dininger's work highlighted the risks and responsibilities of investigative journalism, particularly for freelancers who operate without the guarantee that their publisher will aid them in court or pay any resulting legal fees. Penrod said Michelle chose to speak up regardless. When accepting the award, Dininger gave a shout out to KPCW for providing the interview with Tanner that launched her investigation, as well as for the bravery of a couple of whistleblowers who came forward with information to corroborate her findings. And while the school district spent another $15,000 on attorney fees to discredit her report, she said no corrections ever had to be made.
Why did they do that? This should never have been so grueling, but we stuck with it. We are not actively empowering our audiences with correct information. We are actively disempowering them through omission or anything else, right? We cannot have that, especially now.
Dininger also received the first place in the Writing and Reporting on Education category for the same story. A full list of winners at the 2025 awards will be available online at kpcw.org. Well, the Park City Council wants to begin studying the potential for an aerial transit route between Deer Valley's Snow Park base and Richardson Flat east of U.S. Highway 40. KPCW's Parker Malatesta reports the council is also supportive of upgrading the Park City Mountains town lift.
At a meeting Thursday, Park City Council member Bill Sirocco said a tri-cable gondola between Snow Park and Richardson Flat could help reduce vehicle traffic at the base area.
You know, we can't begin to change behavior unless we have a more convenient option for people. And I think this accomplishes that.
Councilmember Jeremy Rubel also expressed support for exploring the concept in an effort to get cars off the road.
It actually makes a lot of sense to me if we could bring folks into the city at the snow park area. They go ski, they hang out, they're spending their tax dollars in the city.
The council has previously discussed improving a 700-space parking lot the city leases in Richardson Flat from the Larry H. Miller Company. Council members Ed Parisian and Tana Tolley were also in favor of studying a Richardson Flat connection, but Tolley added a caveat.
I'm not in favor of us doing something where we're exchanging like a Dakota Pacific style type project in exchange for a giant gondola.
Councilmember Ryan Dickey had a similar sentiment.
I'm not looking to develop a town center, but if it's feasible and you can get from 15 minutes to the base of Deer Valley, of course, that's phenomenal. So let's study that routing. It can also go a couple of different places from there.
The preliminary gondola discussion was born out of a broader plan to redevelop the Main Street area. Thursday, the council also evaluated several alignments for a different aerial connection between Old Town and Snow Park. There was majority support to study a route connecting Deer Valley's base and the China Bridge parking garage on Swede Alley. The southern portion of the garage is deteriorating and repairs are required to keep it operating in the coming years. The council wants to study an aerial connection at China Bridge in conjunction with broader redevelopment plans for the property. Dickey and Tolley expressed support for also analyzing the Brew Pub parking lot at the top of Main Street, A staff presentation identified a route from the lot as having the least amount of interference on private property compared with other city-owned parcels along Swede Alley. Separately, the council signaled a strong desire to see Park City Mountain's town lift upgraded into a gondola. Local tech billionaire Matthew Prince recently purchased the town lift plaza on Main Street and has expressed a desire to upgrade the lift into a gondola and connect it to Big and Little Cottonwood Canyons. There was also a brief discussion about connecting a new version of the town lift to Deer Valley terrain, but the council did not consider any specific plans Thursday. Park City Municipal is a financial supporter of KPCW. I'm Parker Malatesta, KPCW News.
Well, Summit County Clubhouse members presented at a professional conference last week in St. George. In the studio with details, I have longtime Clubhouse staff member Philip Sharpless, along with one of the members, Scott Kay. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Morning.
Phyllis, maybe just give us a little bit of background. What was the conference about?
We've tried to have yearly Utah Clubhouse conferences, and they chose June to have one in St. George. But it was, so we do it on a yearly basis. It's been a couple of years due to various things, but it was great. We had probably an attendance, what do you say, Scott, maybe 110? Yeah, members of the clubhouses all over the Utah.
Okay, so the clubhouse model actually international, right?
Yes, yes. And we were, pitch in anytime you want, Scott. We had a representative from Clubhouse International there to give two speeches, and she was amazing. She actually was the founder of Summit County Clubhouse, Amber. You met Amber. She now works for Clubhouse International, and she does a lot of good. Her focus is employment.
Okay, so that's what she talked a little bit mm-hmm. about, employment?
Yeah.
Okay. Any idea how many clubhouses Utah has?
Has six.
Six of them.
And one, the clubhouse that we were, where the conference was, is just about ready to be accredited. And good news for us, do you want to share our good news?
Yeah, we're accredited officially.
Yep. All right. We went through accreditation about 4 or 5 months ago.
Yes, and we weren't even told. And it wasn't until when we got to the conference last Wednesday that there was a slide that said that we were the newest accredited clubhouse in Utah.
Okay.
Congratulations.
But what that means, Leslie, is that there's possibility of extra funding from the government, and it also means that we are very good at following the worldwide standards. And they're not easy. Mm-mm. They do a lot of work.
What are some of those standards require?
Do you want to go? The big one that we struggled with was being open 5 days a week. Clubhouses run like a business, so we are supposed to be open 5 days a week. And we're currently open four, but we're working towards that fifth day. What happens is that we have several staff that drive from Salt Lake, and so working from home that one day is a real perk. So we're going to have to figure that one out, how to make it so that we are open. Some other standards would be that we have to have an employment program, housing, which we all know is really tough here in Park City, an education program. We have to have full running units that are run by the members. We have two units, and they are definitely Scott does the business in the business unit. You want to tell him what you do?
I help with the finances, and basically, you know, just want to make sure that we're on top of things budget-wise, and we're actually thinking about also hiring more staff as well. So we're growing so quickly that we're needing some more people to help.
But if there's any computer issues I need help with, I go to Scott. So it's really awesome to have him willing to do it. And if you don't mind me saying, your future employment possibly will be in that area, right? And has been in the past?
Not in the past, but yes, coming up, yes, totally. I mean, I've done computer work in the past, but it's quite a bit different than what it is that I'm helping out with the clubhouse now, so.
Okay, so now is your accreditation contingent on you opening 5 days? Do you have a certain amount of time to get
that
done?
Yes, we haven't, like Scott said, no one told us, so we haven't seen the official recognition of accreditation, and I think when we get that, it'll probably say, you have so much time to, there are only four areas we have to work on. So I'm thinking that that's probably what we'll find out.
Yeah, so Scott, it sounds like you did visit the clubhouse in St. George.
No, not the clubhouse in St. George. There was a conference, Utah conference, that the six clubhouses converged to this yearly conference down there.
Okay, so did you get to visit the clubhouse then and see what
they
do?
No, none of the clubhouses. It was all like in a hotel room where, you know, speeches were there. You know, speeches were made and people were talking about their experiences about their own clubhouse. Like, you know, there's a clubhouse in Layton. There's a clubhouse, you know, in Cedar City, so.
So anything you heard that it's like, oh, that would be great to bring to the Summit County Clubhouse?
Yeah, there's something at the very end called wellness that we talked about on that Friday. And that is what is so needed at the clubhouses because that regulates mental health. And without that, then, you know, we can't function. So in order for us to function well, we got to have, you know, fresh nutritional programs and meals and things like that.
Yeah, so we had a really good wellness session that talked about one of the clubhouses and some of the things they're incorporating. They have a volunteer dietitian person coming and really coming up with some really great recipes and ideas for healthy foods. And, you know, that's something that clubhouses worldwide, I think, struggle with. When you have a mental illness, sometimes, you know, you don't concentrate on those kinds of things. And so your health can quickly go down. Like Scott said, that's crucial to maintaining mental wellness as well. But wellness also includes physical, social, cultural, you know, educational, financial, all those things. And there is one of the standards that, I love the standards, that talks about how each clubhouse should have a good active wellness program. And Jen, who is very active, wants us out walking every day and doing as much movement as we can. But it also includes all the other things too.
Sure. So is that something you think you'll begin, just maybe a more robust wellness program?
Yeah, definitely more robust. And I want to say that there was something at the conference where we talked about that reducing stigma. That's kind of like on the sidelines. It's parallel to what nutrition and what we were talking about with the wellness. Because we all have specific issues. And whether we're a clubhouse member or not, we all have some sort of issue, whether it fits in the box of clubhouse or not. And I think it's great to be vulnerable about our own personal issues to where we can recognize that we're all human.
Yeah, because when we store them in a box somewhere, that's when trouble comes.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. You heard from the mayor of St. George, Michelle Randall. What did she have to say?
She was awesome. She's probably in her 60s, first female mayor of St. George, and she has a lot of experience with mental illness. She disclosed that she had postpartum after her second child. She had a brother who died by suicide not long ago, and she has a nephew, I think, that is struggling as well. So, you know, it's everywhere, Les. It's everywhere. And she was really open, and she laughed about all the boards that she's serving on. She said they're boring except for the Elevate board, and she loves that board. She said, I'll never leave it.
Okay. You mentioned earlier about an employment program, and certainly employment by club members is an important component of Clubhouse. So what did you guys take away from the conference there?
Well, I helped with Phyllis in conducting that part of the conference in the slideshow and just talking about how temporary employment is really important to get people back into the workforce. And it's so nice to have staff members to be able to, you know, handhold them to get a part-time position somewhere because, you know, that builds their confidence and it builds their self-esteem to make them feel like they're contributing to society in some way. So, yeah.
We have worldwide, the Transitional Employment Program, and I think Jen's probably talked to you a little bit about that, but that's when we partner with businesses in the community where we provide they're actually hired by the business, but we provide the employee, and we train them, and we support them, even where we would do the job if they were sick. It's a win-win. We had a guy from, I don't know if you've heard of Chubby's. It's a local franchise, and St. George has one. And he spoke, the owner of Chubby's, spoke about the success he's had with the members of Elevate Clubhouse and how he can count on them almost above anybody else. And he was so passionate about the TE program. He will go to any other owner that has any questions about hiring members of the clubhouse. And we need a couple more here in order to maintain our accreditation. We only have one, and that's over at Restore. Mm-hmm. But we do need probably at least one more in the community.
Yeah, so is that something, I mean, Jen's working on just going visiting with businesses to
and
find
we
out?
Were brought, we brought home, Scott brought home a really good handout about transitional employment and how to make it work better.
Yeah, and so where are many of your members working? Just all, just different businesses throughout town?
Oh, we have 60% of Summit County Clubhouses. Clubhouse members are employed. That's huge. Worldwide, anyone with a serious and persistent mental illness, it's 10 to 20% are employed. So that's, we're very proud of that. Here in Park City, there's plenty of opportunity for employment. Scott, do you want to tell her your experiences with employment?
Yeah, so I was, I had an issue June of 2023 when I lost everything. And I won't get into it too much, but it brought me to my knees and I had to find some help. And that's when I became a Clubhouse member the month after, July of 2023. And then from that point, I was looking to recover, you know, mental health wise, and saw therapists and, you know, started to get back on my feet again. And from that point, a year later, I found about a year later that I got help with a Clubhouse to get hired part-time at Vail. So yeah, that was definitely rewarding, and it definitely helped me with my self-esteem and moving forward with, you know, building myself up. And so, yeah.
We don't have any problem finding employment with, like, some more of their seasonal positions, but we really are interested in, like, in Salt Lake, the Alliance House has transitional employment opportunities at bookstore, at a TJ Maxx, at a library, at a law firm. Those are the kinds of employment that we would love to see up here.
Yeah. Well, so that's a great success story. Mm-hmm. Do you have any others that you wanted to share?
Do you want to think about it? Or right off the bat, they gave plenty of success stories down there. But if we want to talk local, we have one of our members, and once again, not disclosing names, but he came to us just after getting out of jail. And when he was in jail, he got an infection in his foot and almost amputated his foot. So he was really out of sorts for a long time. Homeless, really struggling for a long time. He is now in housing, which is awesome. He went with us to the conference and did a phenomenal job. He's so smart. The problem being is that his background check is not great. And that's an issue that all over is a real problem. We were told at the Clubhouse, remember, we were told that there is a list you can go on, I don't remember the name of it, where it says employers who do not require a background check. And I think we need to look into that.
Yeah, so it sounds like this other member, his mental struggles is actually what maybe have put him in jail?
Yes.
Yeah, unfortunate, yeah.
You were going to say something?
Yes, with the success story. So I'm in my own issues, and I have been since 2022, and the Clubhouse has been so great in advocating for me on so many different levels, not just with temporary employment, but also with writing a letter for me and just advocating that I've really improved mental health-wise and, you know, being able to function a lot better than I did, so.
Well, good job. Real quick here, how many members are you up to?
We have an average daily of 8 to 12, up to 15, which a couple of years ago we didn't think we'd ever get there. But I think on the books we have 60, something like that.
Yeah, and what do you attribute that growth to? Just word getting out?
Yeah, Jen really has done a very good job of being in the community. And I think finally the mental health providers are seeing us as a partner. We're not any kind of competition. We're partners in their efforts. So I think that's been, and word of mouth, yeah.
Okay, anything else you wanted to share with me?
Sure. I mean, I think that one of the big takeaways from the Clubhouse is collaboration with other people and just the feeling of camaraderie and being among people that you understand what it's like. And it isn't easy, right, Scott, living with a mental illness?
No, not at all. You know, it requires a lot of, you know, not only medication but and therapy, but also a community group.
Yes, and you can see when somebody has a physical illness, a physical disability, you don't see the mental, and it's hidden a lot.
Okay, so go leave it there, Phyllis and Scott. Thanks so much for your time this morning.
Thank you.
You are welcome.
You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW News Time now, 8:33. Utah fire officials have implemented stage one fire restrictions as record dry vegetation, extreme fire danger, and worsening weather conditions spread across the state. Restrictions are now in place for all unincorporated private and state lands in the state of Utah. Stage 1 restrictions ban the use of open fires except within established facilities or improved campgrounds, as well as permanently constructed fire pits at private homes that have pressurized running water. The restrictions also ban smoking except within an enclosed vehicle or building. Fireworks or other pyrotechnics are also banned. Violating the restrictions is illegal and punishable by up to 6 months in jail and a fine of $1,000. State forestry officials say fire restrictions are in place for all Bureau of Land Management, National Park Service managed public lands, and all Forest Service lands in Utah. The Uinta, Wasatch, Cache, Ashley, and Sawtooth National Forest are excepted from the rules. The statewide restriction includes unincorporated areas of Summit County. Earlier this month, the Park City Council approved a ban on open flames and fireworks in town through October 31st. In Heber City, fireworks are banned except for between July 2nd and July 5th and July 22nd and 25th. Utah has seen more than 380 wildfires this year, 72% of those human-caused. A brush fire sparked Thursday evening in North Summit County. The blaze just off of I-80 near the Emory Interchange burned about an acre before crews with North Summit Fire District and other nearby agencies controlled and extinguished the fire. The North Summit Fire District says the cause is under investigation. The state's largest fire, the France Fire, Canyon Fire, has burned almost 28,000 acres since June 11th. Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. Well, the Friends of the Park City Library used book sale will happen 2 days this week. And in the studio with details, I have a couple of members of the Friends, Rachel Solman and Kathy Lunigan. Good morning.
Good morning.
So I mentioned the sale is for 2 days, Kathy. Days and hours?
Yeah, absolutely. It's July 3rd from 8 to 4 p.m., 8 a.m. to 4 p.m., and July 4th from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m.
Okay, so are you going to be doing a preview for your members?
Yes, there is a preview from 8 to 10 for members on Thursday, July 3rd. That's the very first 2 hours of the sale. So as per usual, members will have access to the books first. Then we will also do a tote bag happy hour on Friday, July 4th. We love that because people for $15 can get a provided tote bag, fill it with as many books as they would like. And so that kind of closes out the sale on July 4th.
Okay. And the library itself is closed on July 4th, but open for the book sale then?
Absolutely. The book sale is taking place on the third floor. So the main library will not be open, but we will. We have air conditioning. We have clean bathrooms. We have really friendly volunteers who will be in there to greet you.
And we have lucky ones. So there will be lucky ones on the 4th as well.
Okay. And for those who want to get in those first 2 hours, you do have to be a current member. You'll be checking at the door?
We'll be checking at the door, but the nice thing is those who are not members or those who would like to renew their membership can do so at the door. So they can either go on the website and do it prior to the sale, or we'll have folks at the door who they can get their membership from. So it makes it really easy. If you're not a member, just show up. And join, and we would love to see you then.
Okay. A membership costs how much?
We ask for $25 to start, and memberships can go as much as someone would like to contribute. We have kind of a ski theme for our membership, so the green circle is $25, and then we go all the way up to double diamonds. So as much as folks would like to contribute, it's fantastic. It helps us support programs at the library.
Okay. Now, how many book sales are you doing a year?
Two. Right around COVID, we tried to really experiment with what worked best for the community, and we've landed on July 4th and Labor Day. Miner's Day, excuse me.
Okay, because you got a big crowd in town right on Park Avenue with the parade. Is that part of it?
Exactly, exactly.
We even hand out flyers during the parade to let folks know. Sometimes people are in town to visit. They may not even know where the library is. And when they see that the library is just at the bottom of the hill, they keep walking down from the parade and it's right there. We see a big, big surge after the parades. That's a busy time for our sale.
Yeah, and in terms of the number of books you have, any idea what you've got you're going to put out?
Thousands. The community room, which is the large room with a glass wall up on the third floor, will be completely filled with adult books. And then room 301 will be filled to the rafters with children's books, puzzles, and games.
We have had a lot of contributions. Our last sale was Miner's Day, so we've had months to gather books, and those of us who go in and sort books to prepare for the sale, we're there every week. There are just carts and carts of books. So our people are very generous in this town in donating their books.
Yeah, that's interesting. It's like, and you've been around, I know, long enough to see this. I mean, with the advent of so many people reading digitally, yeah. You really haven't seen a big decrease, though, in the number of books coming through.
Absolutely. That's exactly right. In fact, readership, checking out of actual physical, some people say dead tree books from the library is actually on the rise. We have a new bookstore in town out at Kimball. Both Dolly's and Barnes & Noble are doing really, really well with book sales. Books are hot.
And the exciting thing is we get a lot of new books that are donated. So sometimes I think people think, oh, these are books that people have taken out of their libraries that have been sitting there for a while. We'll have new books that still have the receipt in them and feel like they haven't even been opened. So it's exciting to have a lot of new offerings as well as some really interesting older books.
In fact, speaking of older books, if I could just interject, we had a recent donation from an estate, and we're going to experiment with a small display of very rare books, which we did some research on. Some of these titles are worth hundreds and hundreds of dollars. We're obviously not selling them for that, but we'll have a special table just to see how that goes.
Okay, and in terms of what people are going to pay for these books, pretty cheap.
Mm-hmm. Adult hardcover are $3, adult paperback are $2, and anything children's is $1. Puzzles and games are $2.
All right. Is that what the same price that you yeah. sell at, like, the corner, the Friends of the Library corner there?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we call that our, you know, 24/7, 365-day bookstore. So for those who aren't familiar with it, it's right across from the library desk, and it's called the Friends of the Library wall. And we update that wall regularly. We like to promote it also for folks who are in town who may be traveling. Great way to pick up a few books for very little money. And like I say, we switch those out often. Weekly, bi-weekly, we have a lot of new titles, and they move quickly.
Yeah, and you just put a little bit of everything? Is that
yes.
kind of the idea?
Yeah.
A little marketplace then.
Yes.
And then once the sale's over at 4 p.m. on the 4th, then what? Where do all the rest of the books go? Back up?
Yeah, so because we have another sale just 2 months hence, we are going to be reboxing them and storing them for the Labor Day sale. At the end of the Labor Day sale, we do have a book liquidator that comes in and takes them. However, we have a call out to the community for volunteers. When you volunteer for the cleanup shift, which is the morning after, you can take any book you want for free.
Awesome. Okay, tell us about some of the things that the Friends donations and have paid at the library.
Yeah, so this is an interesting time for public services like KPCW and the library. And so we have been able to fund things that the regular budget hasn't. Right now, we're really excited about sort of a couple things. One is the graphic novels and ebooks, which are increasing in demand, but they're relatively new categories. And Friends of the Library has been really funding their collections in both graphic novels and ebooks. And then additionally, the business center there, which has a laminator and a hole punch and a copier and pens and pencils and business services, as well as there's something called an OWL, which is for meetings. If you have a meeting with some remote participants, this OWL is a high-tech way of including the remote participants. You can only use it on site, but it's free to patrons. If you rent a meeting room, you can use this OWL for free.
Ah.
So those are services where, for example, if you have a small business in town, these are things that just make it easier to do what you're trying to do.
Okay. What's on the wish list? Any idea from the library?
I think right now they're feeling a little uncertain about their funding in general, so we're keeping them funded. The collections, things like the book club collections, those popular reads, Spanish services has been something we have funded this year, and we have been told there are new requests coming in to serve the Spanish-speaking community in this town. For example, they have these things called playaways and wonder books, which are like Kindles for children speaking Spanish. So, okay.
Yeah. Anything else you wanted to add there, Rachel?
Well, I think with the ebooks as well, by the additional funding coming from the Friends of the Library, people don't have to wait as long. So it's reducing wait time for those titles that people are really interested in checking out electronically. So that's been a really nice contribution as well. And I think the dollars coming from Friends of the Library to the library helps them with a little bit more consistent and predictable funding. So those, the book sales, the Live PC, Give PC, and then our membership dollars are all things that support library programs and give them a little bit better idea of consistent funding for the future.
Also, community events like the Friends of the Library is hosting an author on October 4th, which is part of the Utah Humanities Book Festival. And in prior years, there has been state funding for that, and there is not this year. So Friends is paying for it. The author is Kevin Fidarko of A Walk in the Park. And we're very excited and lucky to have him, but.
Yeah, the park we're talking about is the Grand Canyon.
That's right,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, it's, he was here several years ago, actually, and did kind of a little slideshow with it. It was fascinating. Okay, so yeah, save the date, October 4th. And again, members only on July 3rd, 8 to 10 a.m., and then you'll be open until 4. And then the next day, July 4th, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m., and with the books, the book tote bag sale happening the last 2 hours?
Yes.
Okay, ladies, anything else you want to mention?
Thanks for having us.
Okay, good luck.
Appreciate it.
You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. It's 8:46. KPCW News Time now, 8:46. Good morning. Mike and Jamie Hewlett, a married couple running for public office in Heber City, are entangled in several court cases, including allegations of stalking and retaliating against a witness. KPCW's Grace Dorfler reports.
45-year-old Michael Eckloff Hewlett is a candidate in the race for Heber mayor. His wife, 48-year-old Jamie Smith Hewlett, is a candidate for Heber City Council. This week, the Hewletts were charged in two new cases in 4th District Court. Jamie Hewlett was charged with stalking June 23rd, a Class A misdemeanor. On June 24th, Mike Hewlett was charged with one third-degree felony count of retaliating against a witness. Documents show the cases stem from an ongoing dispute between the Hewletts and Mike Hewlett's ex-wife. According to a child abuse neglect report, Mike Hewlett texted one of his children at least twice to ask who had contacted the Division of Child and Family Services to report alleged abuse in the Hewlett household. The report says he told the child the investigation, quote, is ruining lives. The report says that in their interviews, the children described alleged physical abuse by Jamie Hewlett. According to the report, one of the children told investigators they didn't feel safe in the Hewlett's house. Mike Hewlett did not respond to KPCW's request for comment, but told state investigators Jamie Hewlett had never hurt the children. He's scheduled to make an initial court appearance on the retaliation charge July 16th. In an email, Jamie Hewlett told KPCW, quote, the information being circulated is entirely false and defamatory, end quote. She said the claims are, quote, categorically untrue. She said she plans to address the, quote, falsehoods in court, where, quote, the truth will be established with evidence. Jamie Hewlett is involved in three court cases, including one charge of criminal trespassing and two charges of stalking. The trespassing charge was filed in the Davis County Justice Court May 18th when Hewlett allegedly violated a ban from Lagoon Amusement Park after she allegedly confronted her stepchildren's mother at the park. She pleaded not guilty to the charge. She also faces two separate counts of stalking, one for allegedly stalking Mike Hewlett's ex-wife and one of their kids. A temporary stalking injunction filed June 13th ordered Jamie Hewlett not to contact either person in any way. A new Class A misdemeanor charge, filed June 23rd, says Hewlett violated that injunction. A judge issued a warrant for her arrest June 23rd. Heber Police Chief Parker Sever told KPCW Hewlett was taken into custody June 26th. Grace Dorfler, KPCW News.
Newstime 8:50. Well, the South Summit School Board held a public hearing on the budget for next school year at its meeting last week, and hearing no comments, went ahead and approved the nearly $30 million budget. On the phone with an update, Superintendent of Schools Greg Mon. Good morning, Greg.
Good morning, Leslie. How are you?
Doing great, thanks. So first of all, wanted to mention that the board has moved its board meetings to the second Monday of each month instead of the longtime Thursday night meetings. How come the switch?
Well, with the change in board members from the last election, as they got talking about schedules and things, it just seemed to fit most of their schedules easier. So that's the switch. It's I don't know how long it's been on Thursdays, but I know it's been that way for a long time, and so we switched it the last couple months to that second Monday.
Okay. Taking a look at the fiscal year 25-26 budget, are you raising taxes?
We are not. We are not planning on raising taxes, and we were able to meet all of our obligations with what we have, while still making sure we're able to take care of employees, and as far as increases in cost of living and things like that. So it's a good year for us.
Yeah. It did sound like, though, that the business administrator noted that local revenues are down. Why is that?
Well, property tax valuations came in a little lower than what were projected. It's one of those things you don't know what it's going to be until you finally get it. And so that's where that came from. We just didn't bring in as much on property tax as we had anticipated. So this next year's budget, he's budgeting a little bit more conservatively, just to try to avoid that from happening. So
now, what kind of salary increase did staff get?
So staff got a 4% increase to salaries, and the district is also covering the increase in the insurance premiums.
And what did you see there with the health insurance premium? Sounds like everybody's
yeah, for the most part, I think everybody I've talked to saw an increase in their rates. Ours was about 9% that it went up, and I think that's probably pretty similar to most of the Wasatch back in our region area. But so we saw 9% in insurance increase, and so we were able to take care of that as part of the compensation package.
All right.
Overall, go ahead.
I was just going to move on. Overall, what?
I just say overall, I think we're able to do some competitive increases for our area, for our employees.
Yeah, and the 4% basically coming from the weighted pupil unit that you receive from the state.
Yeah.
All right.
Yep.
What big capital projects have you got budgeted?
Well, we've been trying to get to where we're, instead of playing catch up, we're trying to be a little bit more proactive. So you never know what's going to happen, during the wintertime with roofs and things like that. But some of the big capital projects that we've got, we're just finishing up some things at the rec center, finishing some things up at the new baseball and softball field area with some parking in that. Each school's got some projects going on. We're doing a lot of, carpet replacement, things like that. Working on HVAC things, trying to take, like I said, a proactive approach to making sure that we're getting the longest life out of all of the different moving pieces of a building. And while also making sure we have a reserve there for when things do come up, because inevitably every year seems like things break.
Yeah. Let's see, any other projects that you've got planned?
Well, like I said, I think one of the bigger ones we've been able to tackle some of the boilers and things in the last couple of years, some roofing projects, which those, and it blows my mind how expensive it is to repair or replace roofs on these buildings. It's crazy. But we've got some asphalt work going, this summer, in hopes of getting it finished before August.
Okay. And at one point, the school district was gung-ho on getting a new high school built, but that's really been kind of pushed aside. Just no need for it, or what? What's going on?
Well, there was a push. It was, you know, 5-6 years ago, I think, is really when it was going hard. And they're just, obviously, you know, the bond did not pass. The board met in the last couple months for a working session to go over the facility needs, looking at what the needs are of each building, looking at the age of each building. One of the things that's a little difficult for South Summit is all of our buildings in the Camas Valley, all of the school buildings are relatively similar to age. And there's just no way of, when the time comes, there's no way to build three new buildings at the same time. It's too much. So anyway, the board looked at the different schools and where they're at, and talked about looking at in the long run, potentially going from three schools in the Camas Valley to possible two, where you do an elementary, you know, kind of a K-6, a pre-K-6, and then a secondary school, which would be a 7-12, which is actually how at one point it was in South Summit. And so when it comes time, I think what will likely happen would be that we would probably look at building a pre-K through 6 school, and going through that process to get that taken care of, so that then 15-20 years down the road you look at doing a secondary school. So
what are you looking at in terms of student enrollment?
Our enrollment, like most districts in the state, our enrollment is stagnant to slightly decreasing. So we've seen a little bit of a decrease in the Camas Valley schools and a little bit of an increase in Silver Summit. So far our numbers have been okay, but I don't anticipate the growth that back when they were looking at the studies, you know, several years ago when they were looking at bonding for a high school, the company that had come in and done the analysis had projected we'd have, you know, a growing enrollment, and we just haven't seen that happen. And I think across the state we're seeing a decrease in enrollment, and that's likely going to continue to play out here.
And then in terms of what you need to hire this summer, what are you looking at?
Well, boy, I don't want to jinx it. Knock on wood. Our last few hiring years have been fantastic. We haven't had a lot of turnover. You know, it's always a goal is to recruit and retain the very best. And so our board has been really aggressive on offering competitive salaries and things to try to help lure people into working for South Summit, because unless they live here in our district boundaries, they're having to drive through at least one, if not two or three, other school districts. And so it's been very helpful since our board took that on in their strategic plan. And so we haven't had a whole lot of turnover. And so right now we're looking for an elementary teacher. The elementary teacher that left actually took another position within our district. And so, you know, there's the domino effect. But thankfully, we haven't had a whole lot of turnover the last couple of years.
Okay. I'm out of time. I've got to leave it there. Greg, thanks for your time.
Thank you, Leslie. Have a great day.
You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW.